Everyone ready to talk about some C++? Yeah? All right. First of all, I want to thank you, everyone, for coming to this session, the last session of the day, and especially walk all the way to this room. Just want to make sure everyone is in the right room because there's a room change. This is session dev track 316. We're going to talk about C++ here. So my name is Rong Lu, and I'm a program manager at the C++ team at Microsoft back in Redmond in the U.S. So this is an interesting topic to talk about. You probably haven't seen this before because we don't talk about it that much in the past. You might wonder what application lifecycle management tools has to do with C++, right? So application lifecycle management tools, we refer as ALM tools at Microsoft. It's probably an overused term that a lot of people think of it refer to different things. So we think of application lifecycle management as it is about the problems of how does development team collaborate with each other? How do I test my code? How do I code review the code in the most efficient way? How do I identify the issues and weakness in my code, efficiently use the tools? How do I understand the code that someone else wrote? So it's about all those things. And if we translate those into features, that is going to be Team Foundation Server and a bunch of features in Visual Studio. So that includes our architectural tools, our testing tools, and our some development tools as well. So some of the features are in Premium and Ultimate Skills of Visual Studio 2010. So we're going to talk about some of those features today as well. Just to set expectation that we are not going to cover in depth of Team Foundation Server features. We have a number of great sessions this week that are covering all those kind of things of TFS that you should go to. The reason that I'm not covering those is because naturally C++ works so great with Team Foundation Server that all the features there you can just use and apply to C++ projects. So there's nothing special there. And what I'm going to cover today will be those unique features that you can use in your C++ development cycle. So we're going to start with a little of recap of the features we have in Visual Studio 2010. The reason is we don't talk about ALM features for C++ enough in the past, so it might be a good idea to remind people what you already have. So if you're using 2010 today, which I assume hopefully everyone is, are you using 2010? Okay. Most of the people here. So we have a bunch of features in 2010 today that you can use for C++. And then we're going to dive into what's new coming in Visual Studio 2012. What are the new features there? We're going to spend a lot of time doing demos, just show you the real bits. And I'll take questions at the end. Sounds good? Cool. You might be surprised how many features we have in 2010 for C++. In Premium SKU, we have code coverage, static code analysis, profiler, and if you're doing parallel programming, we also have concurrency profiling feature in Premium SKU. In Ultimate, if you're using Ultimate SKU, we have additional testing features there. There's load testing, and there's lab management feature as well. And last but not least, of course, Team Foundation Server, source code control, work item tracking, team build, those all work great for C++. Just quick show hand of how many people are using Team Foundation Server today? Wow, that's a good number. Thank you. We're going to talk about what's new in Team Foundation Server in the next version. We'll briefly mention those, but I will not go in depth on those features. So just a little bit introduction to some of the features we have in 2010. We have a great profiler for C++. that you can use to identify the performance aspects of the application and see where the bottleneck is. And we have this nice graph that shows you how much time each call takes, and the call stack will lead you to the source code. Load testing. I mentioned load testing briefly. The idea of load testing is like a stress testing. Like you have a bunch of web tests or you have a bunch of unit tests. You want to simulate like multiple users using your application at the same time over a period of time and see how your application reacts. So we have this feature in 2010 in Ultimate SKU. If you're using that, you can give that a try. We have a bunch of diagrams and graphs that shows you how your application is doing under stress. Concurrency visualizer. So this is the concurrency profiler feature I mentioned. So how many people are doing parallel programming today? Just a quick show hand. Okay, thank you. That's about half of the audience. Not sure if you have used this feature, but in 2010 we did ship the parallel runtime library along with these tools. So you have all the tools that helps you to identify unique issues in your paralleled program. So this view is CPU utilization. So on the left side, you'll see that this represents the number of cores. In this case, there are four. These are four cores. And all the green parts is your process. Okay. So if you look at how much the green part covers across the cores, you will get an idea of how many cores your application is using at a certain point. So it starts with three cores and drops down to one core at this point. So this could be an example of, well, why at this point my application is only utilizing one core instead of four cores, which is my intention. All the yellow ones represents the processes. So you can look at the CPU utilization from that perspective. So that's one of the views. The other view is threads. So if you have multiple threads going on, you want to see how these threads are working in parallel, how they are syncing up with each other. Like in this view, all the green parts shows your thread is being executed, right? And the red part in between is a synchronization that's happening. So this actually shows you where when the synchronization is happening. If you have multiple threads and look at this view, and you find out that two threads are not being executed in parallel because there's a pending synchronization between them. And you can tell from this view that you need to resolve that issue first before you can get them all executed in parallel. So that's a thread view. And last, we also have a third view for all of your logical cores. So in this case, I have four cores. These are all the threads in beautiful different colors. And you will see which threads are being executed on which logical core and in parallel. So just a little quick introduction on some of existing features in there. If you are doing parallel programming, I would encourage you to check it out. It could be very useful when you are doing those things and trying to figure out what's going on and all that. All right. Now we are going to talk about what is new. So the list is going to be longer than the previous slide. I want to start with what's new. What are the new LLM features in 2012 in general? Who went to the foundation session this morning that Brian Keller gave about LLM? Okay, only a couple. Okay. He actually showed many of the new features in 2012. I will briefly mention some of those here. Just so you know, these all work great for C++. So One focus we have in this release for ALM features is really to enable all those agile development teams. So we see a lot more development teams adopting agile process these days, more and more of those. So one of the things is you want to manage your requirements using a backlog, and you want to manage your tasks using a backlog. So we have those built-in features in Team Foundation Server 2012. You can easily manage your product backlog, user story in Team Foundation Server. A lightweight requirements tool, a little bit tool to, so sometimes you wanted to do a quick mock-up for your application, if it's UI-centric application. You could use a number of tools. You can use Visio tool that you want to do a mock-up. You can use various tools out there. But what we did was to integrate a PowerPoint add-on into TFS. So when you install Visio Studio in TFS, you actually will have one additional tab in PowerPoint that comes with built-in shapes to help you model like Windows Phone application, Metro style application, those normal Windows dialog, all those shapes comes with it. So you can start there and very quickly, in a few minutes, just drag and drop using PowerPoint to build your mockup. The good things about having it in PowerPoint is because one, people are familiar with it, it's easier to use, and two, PowerPoint itself has a lot of built-in features, like it has its own shapes and all the alignments or the layouts, all those features there. So you can take advantage of existing features of PowerPoint plus the new shapes we deliver and quickly build your mockups. Sprint planning, task board planning, of course, another elements in the agile development. You want to manage those. We have that all built in. Context switching is one of my favorite features. So the idea of that is a lot of cases when we are focusing on a task, right? We are writing code, we are debugging, we're trying to figure out what's going on. There's always a chance that my boss walked into my office and told me to work on something else that I have to immediately to work on. So I have to switch context to another problem. And when I'm done with that, I will come back to my previous task. But we all know that it's time consuming to do context switching. It takes a while for you to get back to that environment and remember where you were before. Where is the break point? Where are the windows and everything? So this feature really is to try to solve that problem. So what it does is, let's say you have Visio Studio open. You have a lot of tool windows open. You have a way of layouting all those tool windows to your preference. You have breakpoints set. You have some code being changed. So Visio Studio has this built-in feature where you can tell Visio Studio, okay, save my work. I'm going to pause here. Save everything. Save all the state. Save my breakpoint. Save all the code changes I've made. So Visio Studio is going to package everything up, including the code changes and layout and breakpoint and everything, and upload that onto TFS. Right? Save there. And you're off to do something else. When you're done and come back, tell Visio Studio, I am ready to resume my work. Just by one single click, Visio Studio will be reloading everything, unpackaging what it has packaged, and restore to the state where it was, like in a few seconds. So that's really the idea of that. And it works great for C++. If you're doing that, give that a try. And a couple more features. I'm not going to go into depth. Stakeholder feedback is a little UI that we integrated. Code review, if you wanted to do peer code review, we have this feature built into Team Foundation Server. You don't have to leave Visio Studio IDE. You can just go and send a code review request to your peers. They will see them, in their Visual Studio IDE and be able to provide comments and send you feedback. And in addition, some testing features as well. Okay, so that's pretty much the major things we have in application lifecycle management tools in the next version. If you want to see demos of these features, I would encourage you to go and check out the recording of the foundation server that Brian gave in the morning. He actually showed a lot of demos of those. So what we are going to focus on today will be the top part, which is the additional IAM features for C++ in the next version. A couple of major things we did in this release. One is to update the features we had in 2010, really enhance them and give you a better experience and more powerful feature that you can use. So we're going to cover code coverage and code analysis feature today. And two more new features that we actually invested in this release. First of all is the architectural discovery tool. And I'm going to show you a demo in a minute. And the unit testing, which is brand new to native C++. We never had one before. So it's coming in the next release. All right, with that, we are going to switch to the demo. All right. So the architectural discovery tool, what is the scenario it tried to, what is the problem it tried to solve? So this is really about how do we make it easier for you guys to understand the code that someone else wrote, right? Especially in the C++ world, there's probably a lot of lexical, the existing code, and you walk into a new project or new team, you are told to familiarize yourself with those code. How do we start? How do we make it easier? So what I'm going to use here, this is Visual Studio 2012 RC. Whatever I show you here, you can go and download this version and try it out yourself. This is completely public release. So what I'm going to do here is I have a solution, which is a normal MFC C++ application. I know nothing about the code, but what I'm going to do here as first step is going to launch it and see what it does and if it works. So this is a photo viewer application. Who doesn't love photos? So this is a little tool that will load a bunch of pictures. If we open a folder, it's going to load all the pictures in that folder, and I can double click on it and I can navigate. I can rotate just a little bit those functionalities. And if we switch to the other tab, we can do like a slideshow, like a PowerPoint slideshow. We'll do a picture slideshow. So it's going to show these pictures. And notice that between the two images, there's a little bit animation going on. There's a rotation, and the previous picture disappear in the center of the screen, right? So that's all working well. But my boss told me to give it a little bit more fancy effect. So right now it's rotating and disappear in the center of the screen. And we want to make it more beautiful, like if I can rotate and meanwhile disappear towards different directions of the screen, like a little bit of random effect and to make it more fun. So what do I know about this application? I absolutely know nothing. All I did was to run it and see what it does. The one thing I remember was I do know there's a start button here which starts playing all those pictures. And creating transition effect is probably somewhere embedded in that code. That's all I know. Okay, let's see how we can use Visual Studio to help us understand the code a little bit more. We might want to look at something like an architectural view. I don't know about you guys, but I never had luck finding the architectural diagrams on the team. Like, if you can find a document or a visual diagram that represents the architectural application, I never had luck. Anyone had that luck? All right, probably not. So the feature we have is to ask Visual Studio to create such a diagram for us out of the source code, so you know it always tells the truth. And you know you can always find it because it's there. You can create it yourself. So all you need to do is go to architectural menu, generate dependency graph. There are two ways you can do this. One is for your whole solution. The other one is for include file. This is actually unique to C++. I'm going to show you both today. Now, we're going to start with the first option here. So what it does is it actually builds my whole solution. And our tool will look for the information inside the binary and your PDB files. And then push all those information into a local database on your machine. And then finally create a graph, all of that information, and really represents the dependency relationships between your components. So it actually doesn't look at your source code, which is important to mention. Why? Because at this point, you can actually use drag and drop any arbitrary binaries into the diagram and crack open and read the information inside. Let's see what we have here. So all the blue boxes, each one represents a binary. So in this case, it's pretty straightforward. I have an exe. I have a library. The exe has a dependency on the library. And both of them have dependencies on external components. That's like MFC, which is not your code. If you're not interested in that, go ahead and delete it. Don't worry about losing your source code. We are not going to delete your source code. So I want to mention that we made it so that you can edit your diagram. And if you want to delete stuff, if you want to mark some stuff, this is your diagram. We gave you the full editing features so you can make it your own. All right, now we're down to two components. Let's expand that and see what's inside. First of all, you're going to see four namespaces showing up here. And as you would expect, if I expand one namespace, I will see the methods, I will see the classes, structs inside that with these dependency relationships. If I expand one more layer, this is a class, I'll see all those methods inside that class. Okay, this is probably getting too big for me to read through. So if we look at a large diagram, what will be the functionality we're looking for? Thoughts? Search? I heard search. All right, try Control F, and you get search. So what I'm looking for here is, remember that start button, right? That's the only thing I remember. So I'm going to type in start. Oops. Start. And just like that. Oops. So this method has onSliceShowStart. It has the start string, so it actually helps me to locate where the method is. Now let's move this around. You will see that all the relationships are moving with it. We actually can see there are three methods that this method is calling. Like getDocument is probably getting the current image, right? And then it creates a transition effect. And it then hides the scroll bar because when it plays, it's a full screen. So without even having to read any source code, I kind of get an idea of what this method does. And kind of know where I should go to make a change to make the transition effect more beautiful, right? So where we should go? Probably this one, create transition effect. Now, we're done navigating the diagram. We probably want to look at the source code and make the actual change. How do you navigate between the diagram and source code? Just as you would expect. F12 will be your friend, just like you are navigating within your source code. We're going to press F12, and it takes us right to the source code. It opens the file and locate to the exact location where the method is. Now let's take a look at the code. First of all, it does rotate effect, set moving direction, and then it adds the effect to the image transition. So looks like this is probably where we should do some work. Okay, I'm gonna F12 again. And we're going here. Okay, looks like this is where the problem is that the code is not written. This is probably too easy to identify, but you know what I mean. This is where we can locate the right method. All right, so what I want to do here is to create a little bit of random effect where I give it a random switch, a switch at random number, so it goes different directions. That might be more fun. So I'm going to use a switch statement. What I want to show you here is one of the features we actually added in IDE, which is code snippet. So now we have it for C++. You just type in the keyword and do a tab. We get some code generated for you. In this case, we are going to do a random. And I'm going to mold this by 4. So any random number mold by 4, there are 4 possibilities, right? There's 0, there's 1, 2, and 3. So I'm going to delete that. And we'll add a bit of code here. So it's pretty simple here. In the case of 0, it goes southwest. And in other cases, it goes to different directions. All right. Let's try it out and see if that actually fixed the problem. Let's load those images again. I'm going to switch to show and start. Rotate, and it disappeared from different directions. All right, that's a quick fix. Now let's take another look at the diagram. We were able to locate this method that we're looking for. The other use of such a diagram will be to identify the key components in your application. For example, get document here. Why do we say it's a key component? Look at how many relationships, incoming links it has. This means a lot of methods are relying and calling this method. So if you were going to make any changes to such a method, you've got to be careful because it's so key, you might break something somewhere else. So that's the other usage of such a diagram. And like I said, it is your diagram. You feel free to edit it. So in this case, I'm going to give it a color. So say mark it as red. So anyone who is going to make this change to this method, be careful. So the good thing about this diagram is you can save it as a normal file and be able to share it with other people on the team. So if they open this project, they'll be able to see this diagram as well. All right, let me close this one. And I want to show the other feature that we mentioned earlier. So scroll up to the top of the file. Notice that this file, which is a CPP file, has a bunch of include statement, which is pretty typical C++ code, right? Now, one of the things that I am always confused about is, like, this file includes a bunch of header files. These header files might include some more header files, and that could go on for a while. So at the end, I am not exactly sure what header files that I am including here. So we can use the other feature here, which is to create a diagram of include files. We added this specially for C++. Right-click on your file and go and tell Visual Studio to create a diagram. Now let's take a look at this. It's pretty similar to what we've seen before. So this big box represents your whole project. This is your project boundary. And you'll see other projects down there and externals. Again, you don't like it, delete it. Let's take a look at the top of the file. Now, this is the CPP file that we start with, right? Remember, it includes a bunch of header files. They are all here. And now, you'll be able to see this header file actually includes another header file, which is resource.h. And on this side, it's even more complicated. You will never be able to tell if you're just reading source code because it's so complicated, you don't even remember how many files are there. So this gives you a view of your file structures in your solution. Again, another perspective to understand your code. So we see the diagrams. There's another usage of it. I mentioned there are two, where is identify your key component, find the method you're looking for. Here comes the third one, which is documentation. We heard a lot of cases where I do that. Like I always write code first, and then write my documentation. Like I have the code already, and then I need to describe the architecture of my code. Now with that, you have a nice diagram generated for you, where you can just take it, go to edit, and say copy image. I can paste that into a Word document, or paste into PowerPoint. It's up to you. So you have all those diagrams integrated, you don't even have to draw them by hand by yourself. All right. Last but not least, I want to introduce to you another tool window we also integrated here. So this is called Architectural Explorer. This is to help you, like another little feature that helps you to understand your code. So this gives you a view of your class, your solution, just really to explore the assets inside of your solution. So in this case, we can try to do a class view. Again, remember we have four namespaces, the same information we saw in that diagram, right? We click on global. What was the class we used earlier? It's something called view. I'm going to do a search. It filtered down the whole list to everything that has a view inside it. Now, what I can do here is I'm just going to delete everything, so clean up. So we can select everything here. So the idea here is I showed you how we can generate a dependency graph for my whole solution, right? But if my solution is huge, let's say we have 20 projects, it gets harder for you to navigate within such a big diagram. So this one is the other idea of like what we called a bottom-up approach, is where I identify the components that you are interested first, and then build a diagram out of that part instead of having to start with the whole thing. So this is going to build a similar view, but in this case, it's going to be very simple and really focusing on the components that I am interested in. So I have three classes here. It should give me a view of three classes. There we go. Now, if we expand, remember this view that we saw earlier? It's the same stuff. But in this case, you don't have to navigate within your diagram. You can navigate in the Explorer first, and then build a view out of that. All right, with that, I'm going to switch back to, yes? All right, so the question is this going to be an ultimate only feature? Good question. I don't think we have closed on the full skill plan yet, but I would say it's likely going to be an ultimate only feature. But I do want to mention that there's a difference between the ability to create the such diagrams and the ability to view those diagrams. So we probably will have those view and read-only view slash read-only feature available in Premium. So as an ultimate user, like if you're an architect, you create those diagrams, you share them. Other people on your team who has Premium skill will be able to open them and view them and navigate and all that. All right, just a quick summary of what we just saw. Use dependency graph to help understand your code, your existing code. You can generate graphs for your whole solution. You can generate graph for include file, which is C++ unique. And it is your diagram, edit it. You have all kinds of editing features in there. Just make it your own diagram. The other thing is the Architecture Explorer is really a great way to browse the assets in your solution. Use it to browse and filter the information, and then generate customized graphs out of it. All right, now we're going to switch gear and talk about code analysis. So the code analysis feature here I'm going to mention is it is a static code analysis. It's probably been in the industry for a while. But this is a feature that we built in Visual Studio. So it's going to look at your code statically. So you can even use that as part of your compilation of your code. It's going to look at your code and identify weakness in the code according to some common patterns of C and C++ code. So this is a quote from John Carmack, who is a founder of ID Software. So they do a lot of games, some awesome games. I don't normally put so many words on one slide, which is hard to read. But this, I like the quote so much, so I have to put it here. So let me just walk you through what John says about code analysis. So he said, "The most important thing I've done as a programmer in recent years is to aggressively pursue static code analysis. Even more valuable than the hundreds of serious bugs I have prevented with it is the change in mindset about the way I view software reliability and code quality." So this is really a feature that you can use to improve the quality of your code. So we know that if we have an app, of course, we're going to test it, right? But there is always a costing associated with testing. You cannot test everything because there's such a cost. And code analysis is really can be used as a complementary approach where you just let it go and look at your code, report issues if finds. You may or may not agree to those issues that are found. But this is like free testing, right? You can just let it go. You go and grab a cup of coffee, and you come back. It reports all the issues. You look at them. If you agree, you can change your code and fix it. If you don't, that's okay. But that's also an opportunity to discuss this and really understand why the code is being written such way. Because if the code, if our code analysis engine doesn't understand your code, it probably means your peers don't understand either. So it might be an opportunity to just to discuss why the code is being such way, if there's a better way to write those code. I'm not saying code analysis is going to give you 100% accurate results. There's always a debate between the number of issues we report and how many false positives we cause. We have to balance between those two. But I would say this is free testing, and it always provides good things. Even if it's not your fault, that it's an opportunity for you to discuss. If you think analysis engine is doing crazy things that obviously doesn't make sense, let us know and we'll fix that. And that's an ongoing conversation we can have. The other thing I want to mention here, which is the second paragraph John mentioned here. Why I want to emphasize on this? Because this is about the feature we ship in Visual Studio. He thinks very high of the feature we ship in Visual Studio here. So he said, eventually, I had all the code used to build 360, that's Xbox 360 game, executable compiling without warnings with slash analyze enabled. So slash analyze is the code we the feature we ship in Visual Studio. Why it's called slash analyze? Because we implement it as a switch to the compiler. So if you're using Visual Studio C++ compiler today, you use cl.exe, whatever switch you already have, just throw in another switch called slash analyze, and it's going to do additional analysis for you. So he said this did slow down compile somewhat, which is understandable, right? It's going to compile your code first, and it's going to look at your code and do the additional analysis. But it's not like it's crazily slow. It might slow down a little bit, depending on the different source code. But he thinks analysis is actually by far the fastest analysis tool he ever used. He actually has tried a bunch of tools. And it is so worth it. Now I'm going to show you the feature and what it looks like that John likes so much. All right, we are going to use the same app. We're going to just run a code analysis on it and see how many issues we have. Even for an app that works all fine, you might be surprised how many issues are in there. Like I said, it takes a little bit longer to do the analysis. So instead of having you all waiting, I'm just going to show you how you start it. I mentioned it's implemented as a compiler switch. So if you like command line, you'd like compile there, just throw in slash analyze. It's going to output results on your command prompt as well as outputs into an XML file where you can read from there. But if you like Visual Studio IDE, like I do, this is how you can use it from within the Visual Studio IDE. Now, we have this new tool window, really enhanced from 2010. There's a new experience you're going to have in 2012. So from code analysis window, you just say analyze. You can do whole solution. You can do project. In this case, I'm going to do this project. And instead of having you watching me do that, I'm just going to show you the result I did like an hour ago. So these are all the results you will see. You might be surprised how many issues are in there. So this is like all these uninitialized memories, buffer overruns, and we also have security rules, globalization, localization, all kinds of rules built in here, and it tells you all these potential issues. Now let's just do a quick search. I'm not going to fix all those issues on stage. That is just too many. So I'm going to give it a try. Say, do I have any buffer overrun issues? I do a search by the name of the warning, and it shows me there's one result. I click on it. It does two things. One, expands and provides more information here. Two, it opens the source code and highlights the source code where the issue is found. Now let's take a look at the information we have. If you have ever used the code analysis feature in 2010, you probably remember all the information is stuck in the little error list tool window. We have very limited information there. Now we expand that, and we added this, what we call a line explanation. This is going to walk you through your code line by line and really tells you why analysis engine thinks there might be a potential issue there. Because in the past, while analysis is able to report all those issues, you might be confused why it tells you such an issue because you don't see anything there, and you don't understand what the logic is and how it gets there. So this is really analysis engine try to make sense of itself and show you what the logic is behind the analysis engine. So I can expand that to have more information. I can click on each of the line. When I click, you notice there's a red rectangle around this. It shows me this is where the line is. Obviously, this issue here is pretty straightforward. I have defined an array of four elements, right? And then I move on to the next line, which is an if statement. It says, entering this branch, assuming flag equals to 1. So if flag is true, it's going to enter this branch. That's what the analysis engine does. And then move to the next line. It says, invalid write to customer state 4 because the range is 0 to 3 and you're trying to write to the fifth element. Why? Because I have a for statement here and I already looped 4 elements, and at the end I'm trying to write to the fifth element. So this one is probably easier to fix where I just change 4 to 3. Now, while we are at this method, we want to see if there are any other issues in this method. So we can do another search by copying this method name and just paste it here. Okay, this time we find 2 results. So this is really to show you the different things that you can search in this tool window. You can use warning name, number, file name, method name, all kinds of different combinations. Whatever you remember, just put in there. It's going to try to search for you. So the additional error we see here is another common thing, which is uninitialized memory. If I click on that, again, let's try to walk through the code. In this case, the first line it starts with is this variable. When I define it, I did not initialize it, right? And analysis engine walks into the if statement. And this time, it highlights the issue is actually at the for loop. Why? Because I'm trying to use this variable in the for loop, but this is not initialized. So this is pretty straightforward code. But if you have a long method, that's like hundreds of lines, all those statements are far away from each other, it might not be easier to identify why the issue is being detected. So this is really to try to help you to walk through the code. And even if in this simple method I have 2 issues, different type, it highlights different lines just to walk through the code. Hopefully that's something helpful. Now, we have identified another issue here. We can choose to fix it, or we decide not to fix it, which is also pretty common, right? Normally what you would do is to put a pragma warning inside your code just to tell analysis engine, well, I understand this, don't report this anymore, I decide not to fix it. So we have this feature built in where we call it actions. You can do a suppress message and do insults. Nothing fancy, but it saves you a bunch of typing. It adds a pragma warning for you with this particular warning number. You'll notice on the left side, it crossed. Once I do that, it crossed out this error. So if I run this again, analysis again, it's not gonna report this particular error. Okay, initialized memory, you probably should consider fixing that and don't do this like I did. But that's just to show you what are the different things you can do about it. So in this release, in 2010, we had probably about 150 rules that we run. In this release, we almost doubled the number. So we add a number of new rules that will help identify additional issues. If you're really curious, you can check out what are the rules that we're running. So go to a project, go to your properties, and we have a code analysis tab at the bottom. So a couple of things you can do. You can enable code analysis on build. Like if you want this to be part of your normal build, check this on. It's going to run it every time you build, so you don't have to remember to run it specifically by yourself. And down here, we added the concept of rule set for C++, which is new in this release. A rule set is a group of rules that we put together. And that's an easy way for you to manage different rules and decide which rules you wanna run. We ship in the box 4 rule sets for native, for C++, and two of them are for native. By default, we are running native recommended rules. If you're curious, I know you are, open that. And we're going to show you all the rules that we are running by default. If you want more rules to be run, check them. You can also set the action here. If you want it to be an error, if you want to be a warning, that's up to you. You can set this rule by rule. I know some of you, probably some companies, have their own policies about what issues should be fixed. You can create your own rule set if you want. Normally, we don't recommend you to change the rule sets that we ship in the box, so it's probably a better idea to create your own rule set and define the rules you want to be included. Just to show you real quick, add new item. What you're going to do is to find the rule set template and add one. Now here, you'll be able to select all the rules we have in VisStudio. Let's say I am really interested in all the buffer related issues. So I do a search. It lists all the rules we have. I do a select all and save it. And in here, just give it name real quick, buffer rules. Okay, save it. Now go back to the property page. Go back to rule set. You'll see that we automatically pick up the new rule set. So you can select that one. And now, every time you run code analysis, it's going to run all the rules against the rules that you select. You can also select multiple rule sets for each project if you want to. If you wanted to do buffer issues plus globalization issues, you can do that. Group them into different rule sets and then set them both on for your project. All right, let's go back to the slide. Just a quick summary of what we just saw. So in this release, really improved user experience and capabilities. There are a lot more rules we are adding to this release. We have got 64-bit support for the first time. Yay. We heard in the past a lot of requests on having that support, so we have it now. The feature is going to be available in all VisStudio editions, including Express. Although, I have to point out that Express has the very basic functionalities. So in terms of the number of the rules, it's going to be a lot less than what we have in Pro and above. But you got the very basic thing in there. All the experience, you have buffer overrun, uninitialized memories, all those common issues we will be identified there. We also have concurrency rules in pro and above SKU. So this is to identify, in addition to what we have there, this is to identify like race conditions, lock intentions, all those issues we have. Also the rule set, the customization of rule set I just showed you, is also only available in pro and above. Okay, now another aspect in the development cycle, which is unit testing. Let's see a demo real quick. Now, like I mentioned, unit testing is new for native C++. In the past, you probably have to do a slash CLR to build managed C++ for your unit tests. Now you don't need that anymore. It's pure native. I'm going to use a slightly different app for this demo. It's just because this is such a beautiful app that everyone likes. So this is a basic calculator, nothing fancy. It is a basic calculation like that. All right. Now this solution has three projects. This one is my MFC app. Calculator service is like my business logic. And the test project I'm going to mention in a minute. Now, if we expand this business logic layer, we can open that file. And we will see that all this complicated calculation is happening here. This is doing add, sub, divide. Let me just change that to the right number real quick. All right. Let's say we want to throw in some really lightweight tests for this application. I probably don't want to do the full UI automation here because it's so heavyweight. I have to figure out which automation framework I have to use and make sure that the mouse is moving and click on the right button, all that. I don't want to do that because what I want to focus on is really the functionality of this application, which is all these key calculation methods. This is probably where unit testing will be very helpful because the unit test framework we ship is really lightweight and meant to be easy to use, really lightweight, and for situations like this. Now, what you will do is to add a new project, and under C++, there's a test tab. And you select native unit test project. This is new in 2012. You just go ahead and create that project, which I did earlier with this one. Remember to add a project reference from this test project to the project you're testing. But that's about it. That's all I did. Now I'm ready to write my unit test. Take a look at the default code that comes with the template. Pretty straightforward. It includes the CPP unit test framework, a using statement, and creates a default test class, and within that it's a default test method. Now, we are going to real quick add include because calculus service is the function that I'm going to test. For here, I'm going to give it a name. For my first unit test, I'm going to test add functionality here. I'm going to start with defining a bunch of variables I'm going to use. I'm going to use calculator service and give a name. I should remember to initialize the variables. Otherwise, I get analysis warning there. Okay, so now we're going to do A plus B. So this is the expected value. And I'm going to do actual value equals to calculate.add. And we're going to pass in A and B. And last, all I need to do is to compare these two values. And if they are the same, then my test case should pass. So as you would expect, we ship assert with these functions. I'm going to use the very basic one for here. Okay. And I'm going to build my solution. Okay. I want to introduce to you this new tool window for unit testing. So this is going to be consistent across managed and native. So if you have tests for different languages, JavaScript also included, C#, VB, C++, we have one view for you to manage all of your tests. So what I did was just to build my solution. And the tool window is smart enough to look at the code and be able to identify all the tests I have in my solution. In this case, I have one. I can just run it from here, which passed. Okay, this is pretty straightforward, right? Now we're ready to write a second unit test. You know what I'm going to do? What's the easiest way to write a second unit test? Copy paste. You're right. We're going to do that. Now, this time we're going to test divide. And it should be really easy just to make a few changes. Do a divide. And I'm going to build again. Notice there are two tests found, both passed. Of course, that works. But you probably don't want to do the copy-paste for all the tests, because there is a common part across all these tests. You probably don't want to do that every time, which are the definition of these variables and initialization of your variables. Now, we do have that support where you can move this up to your test class level. And you can move up your initialization code into a test method initialize. Just give it a name, whatever name works. And I'm going to move that to here. So test method initialize is going to run before each of your test method. So whatever number you mess up in one of the tests is not going to affect the next tests being run, because the number will always be reset. Now I can remove this part. I can remove these numbers and build. And it still works. All right, that works well. Now what I want to do is to do something scary. We all know what happens when B is 0. What's going to happen here? Exception. Exactly. So if I do this and run all the tests, notice that this time the divide tests failed. We actually would put all the failed tests up on the top, so it gets your attention. All the passed tests, we will collapse them and assume you are not interested. But I do want to mention that one good thing about this is, even if one of your tests throws an exception, your other tests are able to continue to run. This is important, right? You don't want to stop in the middle of that. Yes. The question is, can you read the results outside of Visual Studio? I do believe the results outputs to a log file. So yes, you can. Okay, let's try to fix this issue here. So in this case, if B equals 0, what we should expect is an exception, which is also a valid test case, right? I should make sure when this happens, there's an exception being thrown. So I'm going to make some changes here. I don't have expect value anymore. And I am not going to have use the or equal. Instead, I will be using expect exception operation here. So what it does is it takes in an exception type and make sure this type of exception is being thrown. If that's the case, the test case will pass. So what I'm going to take in is calculus service. This is a divide by zero exception. And what it takes in by reading the tips there is a function object. I can do a functor here. So what I am going to do is to turn this, to define this functor here, to turn this divide method into a function object. So what I'm going to do is use a lambda function here. This is new in 2010. If you are using 2010, this is like anonymous function there. You can define a small function without even giving a name. So I'm going to start with this. This is like telling compiler this is going to be a lambda expression. This is where you can pass in your parameters like normal. And I define, this is the return type. In this case, it's going to be an integer. And this is going to be the body of the lambda. And that ends the whole sentence. What I'm going to do is to return whatever value is there. Just put in here. And I'll delete that. OK, there are a couple of red squiggles, which are expected. This is telling me that I'm using local variables that I cannot use those in the lambda body unless I capture those values, tell the compiler to capture those values. The way you do that is put an equal in there and tell compiler to capture all the local variables in there so that you can use it inside the lambda body. Another squiggle here is telling me I didn't define a type. The easiest way to do that would be to use auto there, which is also a C++ 11 feature. This is like var in C#, right? Because the compiler actually knows what type you're trying to define by reading on the right side. I don't really care what type it is. The compiler will figure it out for me. So I'll do that. And now it passed, because it expects the exception. I'll show you one thing real quick to add some more tests in here. That is to test sub, multiply, all those functions. I can rebuild, and you'll find a lot more tests. Okay. A recap of what we just saw. We have a new native unit test framework in this release. You can author tests, write tests, manage tests, and see the results. It is available in all editions, including Express. Although, you get more features if you have Pro or above. One thing I didn't get a chance to show you is the continuous run after build. This is like to include test running as part of your build. So every time you build, we kick off all those tests and let you know if there's a failure. So you know something you change, break the tests. And that's something you should fix. It is also fully extensible. So if you are using other unit test frameworks out there in the community, you have existing tests, but you really like the new experience inside Visual Studio, you can plug in any third-party framework into Visual Studio. All you need is a little test adapter that understands how to run your test code. But with that, you will get the full experience inside Visual Studio. So we do look forward to the kind of new test adapters that you guys can come up with and really share that within the community and be able to bring your existing tests into Visual Studio experience. Last, I want to show you real quick, just 1 minute, the integration with code coverage. So I mentioned this is a feature that we have in 2010. In the next release, we really enhance the experience and make it really easy to use. If you have used it in previous versions of Visual Studio, you probably remember we have this config dialog where you need to specify what are the binaries you need to instrument and then figure out exactly what you want to do and come back and run code coverage. We found that's too much to handle. So we simplified the experience and guess how easy it is that anyone can do it. We simplify it down to just one button click. So in this case, I can run all the tests. It all passed, right? And at the bottom, you will see code coverage results. So we did not change anything in this window. This window was what we have in 2010. But this nice integration with in-tests is brand new. So I can expand that and see the coverage. One more. And let's see. Who is not covered? Divide obviously has 4 blocks that's not covered. Click on that. Do you see the colors? Yes. So the blue lines are what have been covered by your tests. The red part is what have not been covered. Obviously, we tested the case of B equals 0, but did not test the normal case. That's why this line is red. And this is a way for you to find out where in the code that's not covered by tests, and maybe go and add one more test for this case. And you can also run code coverage for just the test that you selected. So maybe you add a couple of new tests. You just want to see these are covering the code that you think they should cover. So you can get a partial result as well if you want. Okay, so simplified user experience and really nice integration with unit test framework. You can analyze code coverage by single click for all of your tests, for the tests you select. Again, allow integration with third-party unit test framework. If your test adapter understands how to run the tests, how to get to report the data, we can fully integrate that experience. All right, so a summary for the whole session. Besides what we have in 2010, these are the new things that's coming. Our goal is really to give you access to all those tools to help build safer and reliable and high quality C++ apps. The good thing in 2012 is we actually pushed down many of the features into Express, so everyone have access to those tools. It's going to be free. Of course, it comes with limited functionalities compared to high-end SKUs, but the basics are there. So it's all there for you to use. I mentioned that Profiler is going to be Express as well. Of course, the very basic CPU sampling only. So you get to use all that, and plus all the general ARM features in 2012. So enjoy, and we hope that all the efforts we made into this release are really going to help you across the different cycles in application development. So with that, I can take a few questions if you guys have any. No? Okay, there's one. Oh, sorry, can I get this gentleman to go first?
What prerequisites do we have to execute on these tools? Like, does it have to be a .NET application, or is it working with Win32, or does it also support older projects?
Sorry, which feature are you talking about, or all features?
Code analysis, for
example. So the question is, do you need, what kind of projects does that apply on, right? So first of all, there's no .NET involved. This is all pure native C++. You can use them on your, for example, your 2010 projects if you choose not to upgrade your projects, but you still want to open them in the new IDE, that's fine. You can run that on your old projects as well. And it works across all kinds of different project types, so that Win32, MFC, also including the new Metro-style apps that you're going to build for Windows 8, that will work as well. I'll let this gentleman go first. Sorry. Yes. Okay, so the question is, for code analysis, you can create your own rule set, and can you write your own rules? So the answer is not yet. We have not exposed those extensibilities to public yet in this release, but we hear this feedback a lot, and that's definitely high on the list for next version. Yes, you have a question. Good question. So the question is, in 2010, we have this sequence diagram, which can reverse engineer your source code into this nice diagram. Does it work for native? Not yet. I'm sorry, there's not better news yet. But that is also high on the list. Yes, one more. Okay, you guys really know what questions to ask. So code metrics for native, not yet. So you know there are so many things on the AOM list. There are only so much we can get to in each release. What I show you here are all the new things we did for next release. So we didn't get a chance to implement code metrics yet. Yes. All right, so, sure. Sorry, what's that? Oh, native device development? You mean specifically for Windows Phone or other devices? So for Windows Phone, I don't know if you have seen the announcement last week. Okay. I see, Windows CE. Okay, so the question is, do we have the tools for Windows CE development back in this release? As far as I know, we are not able to discuss that at this point. I do not know exactly what is happening there. Sorry about that. But we do have support, native support for Windows Phone 8. All right, so I am going to be at the Visual Studio booth after session for tonight and on Friday as well. So if you have more questions, send me a mail or stop by the Visual Studio booth and we can have a chat. We have some more related content. We have a couple more breakout sessions. So if you're really interested in AOM features, like I mentioned, there's a foundation session that happened this morning. They actually demoed many of the things I mentioned. So I recommend you to check that out. There's another session that also happened this afternoon earlier, which is to introduce the new unit testing experience, which I showed you a little bit as well. And if you're interested in more C++ sessions, we have three more. On Wednesday, we have a session for the overall what's new in Visual C++ in next version. On Thursday, we have building Metro-style apps with C++. On Friday, there's a C++ AMP session, which Kate is going to give. Kate is sitting in the back of the room. So I would definitely recommend all these sessions if you're interested to see what's going on in the C++ world. And with that, that's all I have. Once again, thank you for coming. You are awesome audience. Asked great, great questions that all the features that we don't have. I appreciate that. really, thank you very much for coming, and hope you enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.